Tonight in Arkansas, there's a mother tucking in her daughter and turning off the light. A business owner is burning the midnight oil. An at-home dinner date is plating up possibility. And it's all happening under one roof. How? The power of a conversation. Like the one John from Integrity Solutions had with First Horizon Bank about his vision for a sustainable mixed-use building. Now it's not just words, it's life. First Horizon Bank. Let's find a way. Go to firsthorizon.com/John. First Horizon Bank, member FDIC.
In the South, it's always college football season. And the king of college football reigns supreme all year long. Southern Sports Today proudly presents The Chuck Oliver Show. It's an inside look at everything college football, presented by Dr. Pepper and Hooters. Your home to watch all the college game day action with an ice-cold Dr. Pepper. Now live from Atlanta, Georgia, it's time to talk college football with the reigning king of college football, Chuck Oliver, on Southern Sports Today.
I am not here for your symbolic gestures. Please, save them. I don't need them. Talk about that here in just a couple of seconds. It's Dan Matthews for a second straight day in for the Kang. Chuck is a little under the weather, so no worries. All good. You know, I understand, too, like whenever you say someone's a little under the weather, it's, you know, immediately, oh, you know. Which, you know, that's a trained response for the last couple of years. But I assure you, everything is good with Chuck. You know, it's just also, too, hey, another thing from the last couple of years, let's remember life before that as well, is sometimes this time of the year, you could just be a little under the weather. And then you're out for a couple of days. And then you're, you know, able with a little bit of R&R and some fluids and maybe a little bit of the Campbell's chicken noodle soup and all that kind of stuff. You find your way back in. So get well soon, Chuck. We'll see you back here very quickly. But I am in for him again today. Got another good show for you lined up. Let's talk all of the state of Florida college football, because there has been some good that we can point to. There's been some bad, and then there's been some just downright awful in the state of Florida, which I think we look at it much like Texas, much like California, much like Ohio, much like Georgia, you know, any of these other, South Carolina, can't forget about the Palmetto State. Boy, they've shown some good things. North Carolina, too, over the last couple of years, is that there's certain states we look to be able to have some strong college football. And Florida, really, I would say, for the better part of the last 10 years, has had some pretty up and down results in that department. So we will talk all of that. Again, Matt Baker, Tampa Bay Times. He's going to join us here in a little over 10 minutes. Bottom of this hour, love this guy. Love Chris Gordy. Anybody I would say with the name Gordy attached, we're huge fans of around here on the Chuck Oliver Show. That's Gordy Rush. That's Chris Gordy as well. Two great guys. Love having Chris Gordy on. And Gordy Rush, whenever we want to talk some LSU, we go to our guy. Gordy, what do you got on the sidelines? You know, it's my best Chris Blair out there. Chris, if you're listening in Baton Rouge, I hope I didn't butcher you. But anyway, bottom of this hour, we'll talk with Chris Gordy. Top of next hour, Go Vols 247's very own Ryan Callahan. I think he can handle both the on-the-field current incarnation of the Tennessee Vols program, but also, too, a little bit of the recruiting as well. Because they're trying to have a strong finish there at Tennessee. Is there going to be any surprises for Josh Heupel's team? Also, too, I mean, he's having to deal with coaching changes, which, look, when you're successful and you look the way that they did offensively this year, people are going to look to your offensive coaching staff especially and say, hey, what you're doing over there, how about we pay you a little bit more to come join us over here, and you can replicate that over here. So you're getting that, too, at Tennessee. So we will talk with Ryan here in a little over an hour, and then bottom of next hour, speaking of Cruton, we're going to get into it a little bit more with our good buddy Woody Womack of Rivals. He will join us here. But I said about symbolic gestures, I don't need them. And we already have one example, I think, of a symbolic gesture in terms of the Heisman invitees to New York, which, of course, if you don't know who they are, I'll just quickly lay them out. It's Caleb Williams. I was about to call him Caleb Wilson. Caleb Williams from USC. You've also got C.J. Stroud from Ohio State. You got Max Duggan from TCU. And then the fourth one that seems like it's causing a lot of consternation around here is Stetson Bennett from Georgia, which I'm going to be very honest with you. When I saw the Heisman Trophy finalists were announced, I was was actually sitting outside Caesar's Palace in Las Vegas, just looking at my phone before I caught a cab back to the airport. And I saw that and I was just like, wow, okay, that's kind of interesting, because his numbers this year were not great. And I think that probably Stetson, if you asked him about his numbers, was he deserving? I mean, number one, I don't think he's going to say if he's not deserving. Who the hell is going to be in this situation and say, well, no, I'm not deserving? Stetson Bennett has put together an outstanding career. And look, for a guy that has come from where he has, he's won the ultimate award that you can win for a former walk-on. And that's the Burlesworth Trophy, which he just won on Monday there in Arkansas with our good buddy David Basil and the crew there in Arkansas. But does he necessarily deserve to be there? My answer would be no. I don't think he necessarily does. But then it, of course, morphed into, because, you know, Vol Twitter has to be heard from. And look, I appreciate you sticking up for your guys and throwing out your stats. And I've also seen people throwing out stats to try to back up Stetson Bennett. You can really try to manipulate stats any way you want to fit your argument. And there is going to be a counter, because people will then say, well, what about this stat? What about that stat? All these different types of things. If neither one of them necessarily have a chance to win the Heisman Trophy, then why are they even there? Because if you're going to immediately start your second point with Hendon Hooker being there in New York for the Heisman Trophy as, well, he's not going to win, then I'm not listening anymore. Immediately stop. Then, okay, he gets a free trip to New York. He gets to do the obligatory photo in front of whatever they call the huge kind of wedge of screens and advertisements right there in Times Square. And then he gets to go to the top of the Empire State Building and then, you know, go to, I don't think they do, obviously, because David Letterman's not around anymore. I don't know if Stephen Colbert or any of the late night shows up there in New York still do anything with the Heisman Trophy finalists. But I know that they also, too, will do the halftime of the Army-Navy game this weekend on CBS, which I always love watching that game. It's always fun. But, you know, doing all that kind of stuff, and then you're going to say, but he's not going to win, then why are, like, it's just, like, let's get away from symbolic gestures then. Because if you're saying, well, he wasn't going to win, then your point's moot as is. Because the whole point of it as well is, I talked about this on this very show yesterday with Pete Futak of College Football News, and his point was valid. He said, yeah, if Stetson Bennett's the Heisman Trophy winner, then you're probably going to have people who are pretty upset, and I get that. But this is 2007 on steroids. I mean, remember that season? That was, of course, the two-loss LSU making the BCS title game. But also, too, as well, it was a Florida team who a year later would win a national title. But it was a Florida team that had lost four games in that entire season. And they lost three in the regular season, and then they played against Michigan in the Citrus Bowl. But regardless, you get my point, that it was necessarily looking around and saying, hey, who should win the Heisman this year? Because Darren McFadden was another one. If I'm not mistaken, I don't even think that Arkansas made a bowl game that year. I know that they beat LSU in order to send LSU's season into what was thought to be a tailspin, but it ended up not being something that sunk them completely, because the world completely fell apart on that championship weekend and LSU found their way back in. I'll never forget that, of the Fox selection show, because remember, Fox was doing the BCS at that time. And they showed the players' room there in Baton Rouge, and players started chanting, we're going to the ship, we're going to the ship. And they immediately, you know, went there and were the much better team than Ohio State, and they showed it that night once. So huge for them. But I'm getting off topic here, because I'm looking at a Heisman class here that, if it's Caleb Williams on Saturday, I think my response is just going to be, okay. If it's C.J. Stroud, I think my response is still going to be, okay. If it's Max Duggan, who I don't think it's going to be, but if it is over those other two, then I think it's probably going to be, hey, had a really good season. Okay, yeah, I can ride with that. It was off a one-loss team that lost on championship weekend, but overall, this is a guy that completely put his performance on the line, because it wasn't only the Kansas State game over the weekend. It was all season that this was a guy that just completely took shots after shots after shots on the field. So regardless of how the rest of this season went, and I've seen other people too throwing out names like Bijan Robinson was somebody else that was thrown out as, hey, why isn't this guy here? And then another one too, which is very prisoner of the moment, I saw somebody said, hey, let's change the trophy to this, and it was a quarterback, because they're like, well, that seems like that's the only position that wins this award, which, let's not forget that a couple of years ago, Devonta Smith, a wide receiver, won the award. So is it a perfect process? No. Is it necessarily a award that is going to the best player in college football? Some years, yes. Because some years it's incredibly clear cut. We know exactly who should be the Heisman Trophy winner that year. In 2019, we knew. Last year, we knew. And also, too, I talked about DeVonta Smith. We knew in 2020 that he was the best player in college football. Then there's some years where it's kind of like, ah, I could vote for that guy, but I should really vote for them, but I'm going to vote for them. But getting back to the whole point of, you know, I understand with symbolic gestures because Georgia fans are going to be upset with me about this. Yes, Stetson Bennett is there because of the accomplishments of his team, which you hear it all the time, too. God, it's just the most just droned on, most annoying lines ever is, well, individual awards or team accomplishments. And I guarantee you he's going to say something like that. And it's just like, come on, man, like break away from the pack in terms of saying the same old cliches. But in this case right here, I think that even Stetson Bennett knows deep down he's probably not going to beat these other three guys for the Heisman Trophy. But I think that probably the Heisman Trust and the voters out there, which, you know, I guess it's a certain, you know, percentage of votes that get you an invite to go to New York for the Heisman Trophy. And most years they usually do four. Some years you'll see it be three. I'm trying to think of if it was any less than that. But you get my point is that you see that there is a, hey, who are our four best players? And I think that also, too, you just looked at it and said, I don't necessarily know if we have the four best players to be able to get here. But in terms of the stats and everything, sure, Tennessee fans, Hendon Hooker deserved to get there over Stetson Bennett. But I think that it also, too, it just kind of got to a point where with the fourth player, where they kind of looked and just said, all right, well, this guy finished the season. That guy didn't. And head-to-head, he won, and he's got a national championship to his credit, and he's still undefeated this year. And while his number is not great this season, still been able to have a pretty decent enough season for us to warrant bringing him to New York. So, sure, what the hell? Why not? But to just, you know, to say that this guy over the other, honestly, you're getting down to symbolic gestures at that point. And I don't think that's really fair to either player. I mean, you know, I'm not going to do the participation trophy part of this, but guess what? Not everybody deserves to be considered for everything. Not everybody deserves to win everything. And sometimes in life, guess what happens? The crappy stuff happens, and it's like, man, I didn't necessarily deserve that. And I think that Hendon Hooker had an outstanding season. And I think that now probably his thought process is get healthy enough, be able to rehab enough to hopefully be able to participate somewhat in the pro day circuit there at Tennessee and be able to hopefully go on to a long and very successful NFL career. I think he could. In terms of, you know, just the invites with everything, I mean, I get it. It's a slow time of the year, but are we really getting down to brass tacks about, hey, why this guy over that guy? When the truth of the matter is, neither of them necessarily have a chance to win. I just think it's kind of a dumb argument, and I just spent about 10 minutes on it. So, shows who I am and what I know. All right, coming up next, there's a lot happening in the state of Florida, so we need to turn to a man who can tell us all that is happening down there. Matt Baker, Tampa Bay Times, joining us next right here. It's the Chuck Oliver Show. Dan Matthews in for Chuck.
Back to Southern Sports Today and the Chuck Oliver Show.
Always one of my favorites. Always love this one. Charlie Brown Christmas. You know, just gets you even more in the mood. What always gets me in the mood is talking college football with this guy. Hopefully that wasn't a weird segue. Matt Baker, Tampa Bay Times, at M. Baker TB Times is how you can find him on Twitter. Matt, the holiday time of the year. I mean, I understand, you know, for a college football writer, it's an interesting time, especially, too, with bowl games and everything of the such happening. But Charlie Brown, yes or no?
Absolutely. And that's a great song. I love it.
Okay. Well, there you go. That I always equate it to, you know, Christmas time right now or also to when my brother played college baseball. That was their kind of mound visit song that they would start playing, you know, because it was kind of a, you know, calming. You're at the home park. So, you know, make the home pitcher feel more comfortable after the visit. So I don't know. Maybe that's a little bit of an interesting approach. Who knows? What I think is an interesting approach is talking college football, especially too in the state of Florida. Is the sky falling at Florida with Billy Napier's program?
Personally, I don't think it's falling, but the honeymoon period is definitely over. To some fans, it was over before it started. There was a meltdown, and was it June or July, because they missed out on a couple of recruits, both of whom, you know, the big ones have since committed to Florida, by the way. But obviously, it was not a good first year for Billy Napier. So I guess it just depends on what your expectations were. I would always had muted expectations. I said 7-5. Obviously, they ended up a little worse than that. I think what the year really did was erase the benefit of the doubt. You know, you can forgive a lot of those things. Florida State's a really good team. You know, LSU is really good. Georgia's really good. You can forgive a lot of that. The Vanderbilt's the one that's going to stay for a long time with Florida fans, because that's something that the Gators do not do. So for that to happen, in addition to, you know, just the record as a whole and everything, there's some major kind of soul searching in the fan base, and Billy lost the benefit of the doubt in year one. I think he can recover. Certainly what's going to happen here in the next couple weeks with the portal, what's going to happen on December 21st on signing day, that's going to go a long way, but because he never promised this would be a quick fix, but you can't go losing to Vanderbilt in year one. You can't do that.
Yeah, that was a rough one at the end of the season. I think you're right. I mean, I think it was the end of the season, and that's obviously too. I mean, you know, in the moment, you're kind of like, man, this is a bad look. This is not good. But, you know, I'm not saying that this is comparable, but Kirby Smart lost to Vanderbilt in year one as well. And we saw how the following year turned out. But when you lose good players like Anthony Richardson, that can be difficult. I'm going to make you, Matt Baker, talent evaluator here. Do you think that this is the right move for Richardson, like that he's not going to necessarily improve as a player, or do you feel like that a 2023 season would have very much benefited him?
I think it would have benefited him, but the question is how much, right? I watched the games just like everybody listening to this did. You can see the talent there. There is no question. You can't teach 6'4", 230, or whatever he was. You can't teach the way he ran away from people. You can't teach the arm strength. You can't teach the power that he ran with at times, certainly. There's one play in the Florida State game that comes to mind. You can't teach that stuff. At the next level, they can teach you some of the other things, the footwork and refining that, making the right reads, just more reps. So somebody's going to take a chance on him higher than you probably think, just the average fan listening to this. I expect him to go in the first round. Would I pick him in the first round? I don't know. But I think, you know, in the NFL, you have to have a quarterback to have high-level success. Somebody's going to look and say, I can't teach the size and the speed and all that stuff, but I can teach the other stuff and make it better. And so the question is, what would he have gained by staying? Could he have gone from, I'm making this up, 32nd to 5th in the draft? Yeah, maybe. He also could have gotten hurt. He also could have just wasted a year of making big money at the NFL. So I completely understand the decision. I don't know that I would have done it. I understand the idea of bet on yourself and try to go from 32nd, which is nice money, to 5th, which is a lot more money. But I can't begrudge the guy at all, because if somebody's going to take him really high, and then it's just up to him at the next level. And if you're going to go get hit and play and try and improve, why not do it making a little bit more than NIL money?
Now, and that's, you know, a good point that you just brought up there, because, I mean, it kind of goes against the argument I had yesterday, is I think that name, image, and likeness is going to keep some guys from leaving early for the draft. But I think that it's also, too, there's a ton of NFL coaches out there, Matt, to your point, that would say, oh, with this talent, I can work with this I can develop this talent here. So, that's an interesting point brought up by you. Again, Matt Baker, Tampa Bay Times, at MBakerTBTimes is how you find him on Twitter. Let's actually go to your area, your home area that you cover with Tampa, and that is USF, and they hire Alex Golish. Can he make them into a winning program, and what does a winning program look like there in Tampa?
Well, let's answer the last part of it first. There's no question USF should be one of the top group of five programs in the country, especially going forward. You look at the new look American after Cincinnati, Houston, and UCF leave. There's no reason why, you know, it's going to be Memphis and them, and, you know, Charlotte's had a couple flashes here and there, North Texas, UTSA. But look at, just realistically, the Tampa market, the facilities that USF has invested in, the talent in this area, the fact that USF has a head start on the UTSAs and North Texases, there's no reason USF should not be one of or the premier program in the American Athletic Conference going forward. Not saying in 23, but here in the next few years, no reason that shouldn't happen. And if you do that in the expanded playoff, you should be fighting with Boise State, San Diego State, whoever that is, one of those type of guys for a spot in the playoff every single year. No question. That's what the reasonable expectation should be at USF. They've never won a conference championship. They've had only a couple good seasons. But you look at this scenario, you look at what the resources of this area, when you look at the conference they're going to be in, the surrounding area, there's no reason that's not a realistic possibility. So the question is, can Alex be the guy that takes them there? And I don't know. He's never been a head coach before at any level. That's an issue. And that's why the hire surprised me, to be honest with you. I thought after Jeff Scott's 4-26 tenure that they would really prioritize head coaching experience, and they didn't, because they think, look, this guy was a finalist for the Broyles Award as the top assistant in the country. He was the offensive coordinator for one of the best offenses in the country this year at Tennessee. He's recruited the area. He's been a recruiting area coordinator a bunch of places. He's been around a bunch of turnarounds at Toledo and Iowa State and Tennessee. This guy knows what it takes, and so let's give him a shot. And you know, if you look statistically, coaches like Alex are the type of, you know, first-time head coaches, hot coordinators. Those are the type of coaches who succeed at the mid and major level. So will he be able to do it? I don't know, just because he hasn't done it before. But I certainly understand the argument behind making that the hire.
One final minute here, Matt, and let's go even further down south to Miami. What do you project right now from what we know about this Miami program that it will look like for Mario Cristobal?
I don't have a good answer for that, just because the roster is so in flux right now. I think Miami and Florida are kind of in the same boat in a lot of ways. Obviously, Florida had a little bit better season, but they were both looking at 2023 and 2024 with these hires, because everybody knew the talent was fine, but not what it's supposed to be. And these are both, you know, Mario and Billy Napier are both really good recruiters, really good talent evaluators. They're supposed to acquire the talent and then get that in place while, you know, just making the both programs modernize to get them to win at a high level. And year one was not good enough for either of them. So to me, with Florida and Miami, this offseason is just going to be pivotal. And who are you bringing in? What are the behind-the-scenes infrastructure changes that still need to be done? And are you going to be able to get the dudes to compete with the Clemsons in Georgia? Then we're just going to have to see here in the next couple of weeks. But it's pivotal, pivotal for both of them this offseason.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it kind of comes down to who you are and how you go about doing your business. I think that's probably the questions you got to answer. Matt Baker, again, Tampa Bay Times, M. Baker, TB Times is how you find him on Twitter. Matt, appreciate the time as always.
You got it. Thanks.
All right. And, you know, I mean, I think that's the whole point, is that you get to this time of the year, who are you and what exactly are you willing to do to make that part of your program? Chris Gordy, next, Locked On SEC Podcast.
Support for Extra 106.3 comes from Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy, celebrating their 35th anniversary and offering gift cards in-store and online. You can discover Mother's Day and anniversary presents online at Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy at naturalbody.com.
A lifetime of hard work. Children laughing in the kitchen. Family photos on a restaurant wall. A legacy that lives on. It all comes from the power of a conversation. Like the one Tommy Hall had with First Horizon Bank about taking over his father's Charleston-based restaurant business. Now the table is set for a whole new generation. First Horizon Bank. Let's find a way. Go to firsthorizon.com/Tommy. First Horizon Bank, member FDIC.
King of college football, no matter where you go, with a new Southern Sports Today app. Catch the best college football conversation in the South everywhere with the SST live stream and daily podcast. Download it now at the App Store and the Google Play Store. Now more of the best college football talk in the country. It's the Chuck Oliver Show.
I guess you could say that I am kind of like Kevin McAllister here, and that Chuck is like Peter, and I don't even know if we knew what Mrs. McAllister's name was. Home Alone reference for those of you that are not catching up. But yeah, that right there. Every time I hear that song, I always think of a cardboard cutout of Michael Jordan, because remember, that's what he had on the train going around to make it look like there was a party so the Wet Bandits wouldn't, you know, do the home invasion that night. And then soon enough they did. And Kevin prevailed victorious because of the creepy snow shoveling neighbor that helped him out at the end. That you found out at the end wasn't such a creepy snow shoveling neighbor. So we all learn things about people during the holidays, don't we? Let's talk with a guy that I feel like I know a pretty good amount about, and he's just an all-around darn good guy. He is the host of the Locked On SEC podcast, part of the Locked On Network. He is Chris Gordy. At Chris Gordy is how you find him on Twitter. Chris, how are we doing today, buddy?
What did Kevin's dad do for a living to earn to live in that big of a house and take a family trip to Europe? I mean, he must have been making bank.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, he had a nice house right there, which I got to probably believe is like Lake Forest, a really affluent, rich area of the Chicago suburbs. So there's that. And then also, too, don't forget, too, as well, that he took his absolute leech of a brother, Kevin's uncle, right. Frank, his wife, Fuller, and then I think that Fuller had a sister too, so he took like an additional four as well, which the goal of Frank, by the way, to treat Kevin the way that he does after he is having his whole way paid for. I'm sorry, all these years I've held on to that, Chris.
Look, Home Alone will be on plenty of times in the coming weeks. We'll have plenty more time to break down the film.
Oh, it's part of the rotation every single year, Die Hard included. And I don't care what people say. Die Hard, it's a Christmas party, it's a Christmas movie. I got that there. Regardless, let's talk some college football. I've talked about this a little bit earlier on in the show. Are you joining the crowd out there of saying that you're so outraged that Hendon Hooker is not heading to New York for the Heisman Trophy, but Stetson Bennett is?
Yeah, I mean, I think there was room for both. I mean, I thought they could have brought this group and included Hendon Hooker in it. You know, it's silly to get into the comparisons. But look, it's turned into the NBA MVP award has kind of become, you know, best player on the best team. And when I said that the other day, I said, oh, well, that must be why Stetson Bennett, you know, went best player on the best team. And people started, he's not even the best player on his team. And I get all this from Jalen Carter to Brock Bowers to all these different people, and I'm going, just go look at the stats. I mean, Jalen Carter missed a handful of games. Jalen Carter had a couple games this year where he had one tackle. I mean, you know, it's not all about stats, but the Heisman is kind of all about stats. It's become a quarterback award. And look, if anybody saying that Stetson Bennett doesn't belong in the Heisman ceremony means you haven't watched Stetson Bennett play this year. Stetson's been phenomenal. I mean, as good of a year as he had last year, he brought his completion percentage up this year. His yardage total is up. He's got, you know, seven rushing touchdowns. Like, Stetson has done so much for that team. And look, they have a dominant run game at Georgia, but it is literally running back by committee there. So if it was just, you know, if it was just Kenny McIntosh getting 30 plus carries a game, yeah, he'd probably be a Heisman finalist or whatever. But, like, if we're just talking the best player, they don't have a stud star wide receiver. They don't have the one bell cow running back. And as good as Brock Bowers is, he had a couple games this year where he had, like, 20 yards receiving. You know what I mean? Like, he had a couple games where he didn't pop off the charts stat-wise. Stetson's been a steady, consistent guy all year long. And to me, if he was not the quarterback in Georgia this year, and, again, it's going to sound crazy because people disrespect Stetson Bennett, Georgia would have a loss. Georgia probably would have lost maybe the Kentucky game or, you know, one of these games along the way if they didn't have Stetson Bennett playing quarterback. So I say all that to say, again, Hendon Hooker, I believe, belongs there as well. I don't know why it has to be an either or. I think both guys should have been there. And it's absolutely disrespectful that, you know, Hendon Hooker gets hurt in that South Carolina game and suddenly, oh, he's done. Can't give him any postseason awards. I just think it's kind of a joke.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, and like I said, too, at the top of the show, you know, it was, I'm not here for symbolic gestures. Like, if neither of them necessarily have a chance to win the Heisman Trophy, then why are they even there? I mean, I understand, you know, Stetson Bennett, that's probably a huge reason why he's there is because I think that voters kind of looked around and said, well, there's not really anybody deserving this year, so let's see. They're undefeated. He's got decent enough numbers, and he just won a national title. So, yeah, okay, fine. I'll put him in. I mean, that's what I kind of feel like it was, Gordy. I almost feel like it was, for some of the voters, it was kind of a give-up almost.
Well, it's a bad year. I mean, you know, when you think of the Heisman, you know, I think that they say it's somebody who epitomizes great ability combined with diligence, perseverance, and hard work on the field. Like, There really is no, like, true definition on, you know, is it the best player? Is it the guy that if you take him off that team, they've got multiple losses, you know? Everybody's kind of got their own definition of it. But, Well, Caleb Williams is the heavy favorite, and to do what he did in him and Lincoln Riley coming over to USC and turn them from, you know, absolutely debacle to, you know, literally knocking on the door of the playoff this year was phenomenal. And so Caleb Williams is going to win it. Max Duggan had a fantastic year at TCU. He's well-deserving. You know, C.J. Stroud was kind of whatever. He came into the season as one of the favorites, and I don't think did anything to take away from that. Obviously, he didn't play great in the Michigan game, but I'm fine with the four finalists, but at the end of the day, Dan, it feels like a Troy Smith year. It just feels like one of those years where there was nobody eye-popping, just going, oh, that's it. That's the guy. And so that's why, again, I don't have a problem with Stetson being there, but I do think that Hendon did deserve to be there because of what he did at Tennessee this year was phenomenal.
Yeah, I mean, I had brought up the Tebow example of on a team that finished the regular season 9-3, and then they lost their bowl game, which that's neither here nor there. But, I mean, the same point still holds. I mean, it's just you're looking around, and I don't think that there's going to be this moral outrage after Saturday night when if we're watching the show live, we'll know the winner. If we're not, we'll see it on a bottom line somewhere of, hey, Caleb Williams wins the Heisman Trophy. I think that I'm just going to go about my business and say, okay. So I think that's probably how I'm going to look at that. Chris Gordy, again, the Locked On SEC podcast, at Chris Gordy is how you can find him on Twitter. Speaking of Georgia as a whole, do you feel like that this team is kind of a victim of their success last year and how they've won games this year? I think is kind of a, well, they weren't really impressive, but the bottom line is they still won.
Yeah. Just seeing Louisville is finalizing a deal with Purdue head coach Jeff Brohm.
So oh, yeah. No, I just saw that. Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty huge.
Pretty crazy. No, look, I think, you know, when I heard Kirby was getting some votes for coach of the year, I think he absolutely deserves that, you know, in that this team achieved greatness last year. When you break through and win it all, a lot of times it is hard to regroup and have that same hunger for the next season because you feel like you've accomplished it all. I mean, look what happened with Ed Orgeron at LSU. You know, they go out on top, undefeated season. They win the national championship in 2019. But then what happens? Joe Burrow leaves. Jamar Chase leaves. Justin Jefferson leaves. You know, all these pieces leave. And it kind of felt like Coach O let his guard down. He was like, man, I accomplished the greatest, you know, goal of my career. I won a championship. Now what? And he didn't turn the page. He didn't start over again. And LSU had a downfall for the last 2 years because of that. Kirby's done a fantastic job of keeping that hunger, keeping the players ready to go and go, hey, we still got unfinished business. Let's go run this thing back and let's win another one. And kudos to all the guys who have stepped up. I've talked to multiple Georgia fans this year and said, man, we thought this was going to be a transitional year. We thought, okay, maybe 10-2, like, you know, the defense is going to take a big step back with all the pieces they lost, but defense has been just as good. You know, offense has been, I think, slightly better than last year. The offensive line's been outstanding. So it is really a true testament to Kirby and that whole coaching staff and what they were able to do and regroup and have a second undefeated season. They win their second SEC championship, and now here they are with a chance to win back-to-back championships. And that's why, you know, all across the SEC, the topic people have been asking me for a couple weeks now is Georgia the new Bama? You know, is this run that Kirby's on going to set up and start doing what Saban, you know, has done for the last decade plus at Alabama, where consistently every single year Georgia is in a position to play for or win a national championship? And it's hard to say that they're not going to do that in these next couple of years based on what they've done this year.
Yeah, I mean, especially the way that they've recruited, the, you know, chance that they're probably going to retain most, if not all, their coaching staff. And then also, too, as well, I mean, the players they have coming back, you got to remember, this is a really young team. So I think your point holds on it looking like, you know, Bama's been able to turn that wheel before. Clemson's been able to turn that wheel. There's not a lot of programs that you can look at that can turn that wheel. And you say, yeah, they lost all these guys, but, oh, man, they're still pretty darn good. And Georgia is definitely in that territory right now. It's good for them and their fans. Let's move to a program that I think a lot of people thought could get to this point, Chris, but it hasn't been that way for the better part of his tenure there in College Station. That, of course, is Jimbo Fisher. Can he still win huge at A&M, or do you feel like that this is what we've seen is what we can expect, and there's not necessarily going to be a huge jump in the success there in College Station?
Look, I've been critical of Jimbo, and he deserves all the criticism he gets for this year. To go 5-7 with all the talent they had, you were a preseason top 10 team, and to not even make a bowl game is inexcusable. But the talk of Jimbo's demise, I think, is a little over exaggerated. We saw in that win over LSU what can happen when the coaching staff, you know, assembles everybody, gets everybody to buy in, they put the right players in the right place, and they put together a good offensive game plan. And that was a phenomenal win to finish the season, and it gives them momentum now. I can't tell you how many Aggie fans are going, look, we feel optimistic about the future now. Had they lost that game and finished the season on, you know, whatever, just that dismal run, and you finish 4-8, 4-8 feels a lot different than 5-7 where you finish it on a win over a rival like LSU. So I think Jimbo's going to regroup here and retool. Connor Wegman showed some real signs of life at quarterback. They've got Evan Stewart. Devon Achane just declared for the draft, but they've got some kids that are coming in, you know, recruiting-wise. They'll be able to fill in that backfield. But I'm optimistic, man. There's too much 4- and 5-star talent on that defense to not be better next year. They'll make some tweaks here and there with the coaching staff. I know they're getting some headlines right now because they got about 20 kids in the transfer portal. Look, a lot of those kids are kids who didn't even really play or, you know, we're going to move on anyway. But I think Jimbo's in a great spot to turn this thing around next year. And don't be surprised if A&M is back in the top 25 for much of next year and causing some fits for some teams in the West. I think that they're still going to be a force in the SEC before it's all said and done.
Couple more minutes with Chris Gordy again, Locked On SEC Podcast. At Chris Gordy is how you find him on Twitter. And Brian Kelly at LSU, I mean, year one far exceeded expectations. And they're going to try to get that 10th win in the bowl game against Purdue. But what needs to happen this offseason for him to be able to build on that success and kind of like we talked about on a larger scale at Georgia, sustain that success and be able to build on it?
Well, they got to rebuild the secondary. That's going to be the toughest part. They were able to hit up the transfer portal and get guys like Jared Bernard Converse and Makai Gardner and Greg Brooks and Joe Fouché from other schools to come in, and the secondary overall played very well this year for LSU, but they got to retool that entire secondary up front. I think they'll be good. Linebacker will be good with Harold Perkins back. Offensively, their O line will be much better. Their two freshman bookend tackles will be sophomores. You know, they seem to be in a luxurious spot right now while they wait for Jaden Daniels to make his decision on whether he's coming back, whether he's going to go pro, or maybe he transfers. But their backup plan looks pretty good. Garrett Nussmeier torched that Georgia secondary in the second half. And for anybody saying, oh, Georgia's pulling their starters, no, that was still very much Georgia starters in there to start the second half. And Nussmeier did a great job of being a gunslinger and letting it fly. So you feel good about the quarterback spot. The shocker of all shockers this week with Kayshon Boutte announcing he's coming back for another year. So that's phenomenal. Malik Nabers will be back. I mean, you got a lot of weapons at receiver. I think if LSU, once they settle on whoever their quarterback's going to be, you know, if they can retool that secondary and get that defense just a little bit better, they'll be a force again in the SEC West next year too. So got to like what Brian Kelly's doing. But, man, for all the turmoil when he first got there where he said they asked him what he knew about Kayshon Boutte, he said, well, I know his name. You know, they had a little bit of a disagreement. And in just, you know, a year's time, they were able to turn it around so much so that Kayshon is coming back for his senior year at LSU. That tells you how much they respect that coaching staff and what they're building there.
Real quick, about a minute on this one. Alabama, are national championships still in play for Nick Saban there at Alabama?
Yeah, come on. Let's not act like a 2-loss season for, like, 10-2. They're throwing a parade in Knoxville for that. 10-2 in Tuscaloosa, and they're going, what's wrong? Is Saban done? Is the dynasty over? It's like, come on, man. I was talking to Will Anderson last night at the Lombardi reception here in Houston, and a tremendous kid. And he said, you know, the future looks bright. I mean, they're going to lose Bryce Young. They're going to lose Will Anderson. They're going to lose a lot of pieces. But Alabama's just going to reload. You know that. They're going to be right back in the conversation next year. So looking forward to that. And by the way, the Lombardi Award ceremony will be tonight. Will Anderson, the heavy favorite to go home with that. But Jalen Carter and Brock Bowers also finalists from the SEC. So three out of the four finalists representing from the SEC. You know where the best football's played.
Award season, gotta love it. And Chris Gordy in the middle of that, as well as the SEC as a whole on the Locked On SEC podcast. Chris, always good, buddy. And always good, too, to be able to recap Home Alone before having you on with us as well. So enjoyed the whole visit, man. Always great to catch up with you.
Thanks, man. And just for your listeners, I think we're going to have Brock Bowers on the show tomorrow, so check it out. Locked On SEC.
There you go. That's a tease. I like that there. Gordy, you're the best, buddy. Talk to you soon.
All right, thanks, man.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's the award season, and you're just seeing SEC players all over the place, and, you know, it's the age-old, hey, is this conference as good as the SEC? Is that conference as good as the SEC? Well, I think a lot of times the results kind of bear out the story and how it goes, and I guess I'll just leave that up to you and your interpretation of imagination. All right, coming up next year to close out hour one of today's show, you might think this is fun and a real feel-good idea. It will only last for so long, and I'll explain that right here. This is the Chuck Oliver Show. It's Dan Matthews in for Chuck on a Wednesday. Chuck Oliver Show, Southern Sports Today.
Always college football time in the South. Now back to more of the king of college football, Chuck Oliver, on Southern Sports Today.
Well, you know, we're obviously disappointed. We wanted to see our team have an opportunity to play and get in the playoffs. But, you know, we're going to get an opportunity to play someone somewhere in a good game. And that's going to be an opportunity for our players to create value for themselves and show what kind of team we really have.
Nick Saban, head coach at Alabama, on with Marty Smith. As always a great chance to be able to shout out Marty. He and McGee, huge fans of both of those guys. Genuine as the day is long, by the way. It's not an act with either of those guys. You run into them. Marty, I mean, you know, randomly, I'd never met him before. I ran into him at Hartsfield-Jackson Airport. Treated me like I was one of his best friends. So always appreciate that interaction. And like I said, those guys are great. But Nick Saban there talking. And, you know, of course, there have been people out there saying, oh, ha ha, Nick Saban, you know, whining, complaining about not making the college football playoff, all those different types of things. He's got the accomplishments to be able to speak up for his team any way that he wants to be able to speak up for his team. And in a couple of years, this is not going to be an issue because, of course, in 2024, the college football playoff is going to be expanded. And shout out to David Holloway behind the glass for the timely cut right there coming back from break. Because, of course, one of the things that people have talked about with the expanded college football playoff is, oh, man, this is going to be so great that games are going to be played on campus. Enjoy it while you can, because guess what? It's not going to be for long. And timing couldn't be better from my good buddy Matt Brown, who has the extra points that is part of the D1 ticker family. Also, too, has been on top of the return of NCAA football for EA Sports on Twitter. Matt's a great follow in terms of covering college football. But he throws out that he is at a panel right now called The Future of College Football, Where to Next? And it's got athletic directors from Alabama, Kansas State, Appalachian State, and senior leaders at Arizona State. And he talks about the Alabama AD, who I can only assume is Greg Byrne. I mean, you know, there's different levels of athletic directors there, associate ADs, but saying the Alabama AD. So again, Greg Byrne does note that moving additional college football playoff games to campus does create logistical challenges for college towns. Commencement is happening there in December. When you're playing these games, that probably wouldn't be as huge an issue, but it's also, too, hotel space might be at a premium. Apparently, bowl executives have been beating this drum, too. Yeah, like I said, enjoy this for as long as you can, because when Las Vegas comes to the college football playoff, they're going to say yes to Las Vegas. When SoFi Stadium, Los Angeles, comes to the college football playoff, the same deal. NRG Stadium in Houston, you know, the Superdome in New Orleans, all of these venues that are around the country, and also, too, in, let's just face it, some very nice locations that time of the year that you'd like to go to. Like, would you rather go see your team play a college football playoff game in the cold of the Big House there in Ann Arbor? Or would you rather be able to take a nice trip to a indoor climate there and also just a nice time of the year there in Arizona at Glendale, Arizona, whatever they call the stadium there for the Arizona Cardinals now? You get my point, is that's eventually going to win out. And I get it. We can have fun with the on-campus games, all these different things. It's killing the tradition of college football. Guess what? Your vision of the tradition of college football has been getting killed for some time. So I think that now is probably a chance for you just to say, hey, I'm still going to watch. I'm still going to enjoy it. The game itself is still great to watch. And I can get over myself in terms of the on-campus pageantry, everything of the such. The money wins out. at all times. And if that's already being talked about, that's laying the groundwork for the money winning out once again and giving yourself an opportunity to be able to continue to grow this thing even more and more. So I think that that's something that is going to be afoot in the coming year. And that's something that, you know, again, I mean, it's just that it kind of leads to the stop acting surprised and stop wanting. I think people just want to be surprised because then it's a, oh, hey, I don't have to admit that I saw this coming. I think that it's just if you just understand the way that business works and that how this thing just continues to evolve. I mean, there's more television assets thrown at these things now. There's more coverage than you can even imagine, and that costs money. So eventually, what are they going to say? Hey, let's continue to add to our bottom line and be able to build this thing up. And I think that's exactly what we're going to be looking at here.
Spring is here, and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Support for Extra 106.3 comes from Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy, celebrating their 35th anniversary and offering gift cards in-store and online. You can discover Mother's Day and anniversary presents online at Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy at naturalbody.com.
The Fan is ready for Brave season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season.